2012. We have three bills on the agenda today. First one is Senator Lilly. Good morning and welcome.
Mr. Chair, good morning, members. Thank you. Before us, we have Senate File 1737. And 1737 is a bill that allows a banking tool that allows local government dollars to be kept and reinvested in the communities where they are created. Okay. Currently, banks must provide 110% collateral for all public funds in excess of the FDIC limits. And Senate File 1737 gives banks and local governments another option when depositing these funds, these types of funds. Banks would not be limited to the amount of deposits that they can accept by their ability to provide the 110% collateral, so more banks could bid on those public fundings. And basically what the bill does is it authorizes school districts, towns, counties, and cities to deposit money in the official depository under an agreement that allows the depository bank to redeposit the funds into accounts at other banks that would serve as sub-custodians of those funds. This is a safe, reliable, and predictable method of depositing those funds. And with me today I have Steve Davis, who would like to testify to the actual effects of the bill. Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Davis.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Thank you for allowing me to come up. This is a version
sorry,
of
sorry,
a program.
If you could please, Mr. Davis, identify your full name and who you represent for the record.
Steve Davis, Promontory Interfinancial Network, out of Des Moines. This is a tool for financial institutions to extend the FDIC insurance to protect public funds. We have a program that we offer right now that extends FDIC insurance over $1.9 billion have stayed in Minnesota in communities using this program to extend the FDIC insurance. And what this bill does is simply provide a daily version of this for managing liquidity for public entities. So rather than a term product, a CD, this now allows them to do a liquid product with full FDIC insurance.
Thank you. Senator Lilly, any other testifiers? Senator Gazelka has a question.
Well, Mr. Chair, when you're ready, I would like to offer an amendment, the A3 amendment, to tweak the bill a little bit.
Why don't we pass that out now, then? I believe, Senator Lilly, you are aware of the A3 amendment.
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
This is the one you talked to me about yesterday,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
And Mr. Chair, this
Senator
is
Gazelka.
A tweaking by the credit unions, and I would prefer that representation from them speak to this for clarity.
Okay. Is there somebody from the credit union network? Ms. Humphreys, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Mara Humphrey, I'm Vice President, Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Credit Union Network. This amendment, what it would do is simply add in credit unions into the bill. We adopted this amendment, and this amendment was adopted on the House side. This would also match the bill up with the House language by adopting credit unions into each piece, as well as the National Credit Union Share Insurance Fund, which is the credit union FDIC equivalent, which also insures deposits up to $250,000. Pretty simple amendment. We have parity in other areas of public deposit law, and also wanted to make sure we had parity here as well. Be happy to stand for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there any questions? Any questions at all on the A3 amendment? Senator Lilly, any comments on the A3 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would consider this to be a friendly amendment.
Okay. See no questions. Is there anybody else in the audience who wants to speak on the A3 amendment? And seeing none, Senator Gazelka moves adoption of the A3 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. And the motion prevails, and the A3 amendment is adopted. Okay. Further discussion to the bill. Any members have any questions on Senate File 1737? Seeing none, then, is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak to the bill? And then seeing none, who wants to, Senator Gazelka moves that Senate File 1737 as amended be recommended to pass and be sent to general orders. Correct? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and Senate File 1737 is, as amended, is recommended to pass and sent to general orders.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You. Thank you, Senator Lilly. Okay. And next up is Senator Hamm. I had the good fortune of presenting a lengthy bill in the Health and Human Services Committee late last night, and you were so patient. I'm pleased to the very next day return the favor. So well, welcome to the committee, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope that we won't take as much time as your bill did in our committee last night. So. Mr. Chairman and members, this is Senate File 1738, and it is a bill regarding the PEEP, the Public Employee Insurance Program. And there has been, as many of you know, over the past few years, a trend of public employee groups trying to move from the private marketplace into the public employee insurance program. And the impact of this has been and is significant. One of the impacts is that the PEEP program does not pay the MCHA assessment. And MCHA is essentially a reinsurable pool for people who cannot obtain insurance in other ways, and it is funded by an assessment on the private marketplace. And so one of the things that is happening as there have been a movement of groups to PEEP is that they're leaving the private market where they are contributing, they are participating in the funding of MCHA, over into a program that does not provide any funding to MCHA. The MCHA is, provides insurance for people with pre-existing conditions, and it is a critical part of what our state does. It is, I think, a model for the nation. The recently, I guess not so recently anymore, but the federal health care bill talks about trying to create an MCHA-like structure at the national level. It hasn't been very successful so far, but the Minnesota program has been pretty successful, has worked pretty well, and we think it is important that we maintain the ability of that program to continue to be in place. There's a lot of uncertainty in the healthcare world as we wait to find out what the outcome of the Supreme Court case is going to be as it looks at the constitutionality of the federal law. Lots of uncertainty. We think that it's important over the next couple of years that there be some opportunity for MCHA to retain its integrity, and that is really the purpose of Senate File 1738, which simply puts a moratorium on additional enrollment or additional movement of groups into the PEEP program. And it does that through 2015. I do have a few people here that I'd like to ask to testify. Kirby Erickson, who is the director of MCHA, and he can talk a little bit about what MCHA is and the effect on what has been happening and what the prospective impact may be if it continues. Also have Kate Johansson from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and then Catherine Commit from the Council of Health Plans. And so, Mr. Chairman, if you're willing, I'd like to ask those folks to join us and provide some testimony.
If those individuals come forward, please. Looks like Mr. Erickson. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record. Welcome.
Good morning, Chairman Gerlach and members. My name is Kirby Erickson. I am the executive director of the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. I will tell you I am new, having been on board now just about 7 months, but have found this to be obviously a dynamic and a very interesting time for all of us that are in healthcare. Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, as it's popularly called, MCHA, is here today to testify in support of Senator Hahn's bill, Senate File 1738. As you know, and as Senator Hahn mentioned, we offer policies of health insurance to now 27,000 residents and members of the state of Minnesota. And these are all people who carry pre-existing medical conditions and have been turned down in the commercial market. So, in effect, we serve as part of the broader safety net for people across the state. And as the Senator has mentioned, we're not a state-funded program. We are dependent upon an assessment on the commercial small group and individual market, and that assessment has been really in place since MCHA was formed back in the 1970s. Senator Hahn mentioned our track record. We are very proud of our work that we have done over the years. We are, across the country, the largest of the high-risk pools, and we have been here in a part of Minnesota for now 40 years. A study that was undertaken most recently by the Council of Health Plans showed that the potential impact to the MSHA assessment, if all the eligible public employees were to migrate to PEEP, could be in the range of $40 to $50 million. So we're not talking about a small amount of money here. We're talking about what might be a significant shift of assessment from the public sector into that small private market that is dominated by the small groups and individual subscribers. You'll hear more about that in a minute from the chamber. But I'm here supporting the bill today because we believe as more public employees might move into PEEP, the state-run government insurance program, and stop paying the MSHA assessment, the more the burden will fall on small groups and individuals. And again, there will be a skewing, if you will, to a smaller pool to support our program. With that, Senator, I would pass on to our next contributor.
All right, thank you, Mr. Erickson.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes. Senator Gazelka, question.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. I just want to confirm you said it was 40 to 50 million, the potential that, and that would be passed on to the remaining people in the individual and small group.
That is
plans.
The potential. That is correct.
Okay. And that all would have to be made up somewhere.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kate Johansson, and I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The chamber has about 2,300 business members statewide, 70% of which have 50 or fewer members, and thus are subject to what we're discussing today. The chamber supports Senate File 1738 and thanks Senator Hand for his authorship, as well as Senators Gerlach, Gazelka, Benson, and Brown for their authorship as well. The reason that the chamber supports this bill is simple. It helps to stabilize some of the impact that the MSHA assessment has on small businesses. As noted, the MSHA assessment, or pardon me, MSHA is the state's high-risk insurance pool. So it's currently paid for by an assessment levied on those who purchase insurance from the fully insured market. The levy is imposed retroactively, and it is also imposed according to variation with annual need and the number of entities that are paying it in that particular year. MSHA assessments apply only to the fully insured market. So the people who are paying for MSHA assessments are small businesses in your district, self-employed people and individuals. So your insurance agents, your realtors, these are the people who are bearing the burden and the unpredictability of the MSHA assessment. And due to its retroactive and unpredictable application to just 25% of the overall market, because the fully insured market is only 25% of the overall insurance market, it does create a difficulty for small businesses when it comes to budgeting for how they're going to provide health insurance to their employees, and frankly, just cost in general. It creates a cost barrier when that assessment goes up because the number of entities that are paying it goes down. So when we have groups leave the fully insured market to join PEEP where they're not subject to the MSHA assessment, it exacerbates some of these problems of cost and unpredictability. And that's why the chamber supports a temporary moratorium to help control and stabilize those costs and predictability in budgeting for small businesses as they try to maintain health coverage for their small business employees. And with that, I would just ask for your support of Senate File 1738 and stand for questions. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? All right. I have one, I guess, more just to maybe you can clarify for everybody, because I know that the trend line has been where more and more individuals, large companies, as they become self-insured, and under, I think this was mentioned, that under the federal ERISA laws, then they are exempted from this MSHA assessment. And this has been going on for many, many years. This issue has been discussed ever since I've been in the legislature, and as you that pool gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and now we have this acceleration with this PEEP issue, and it's just really exacerbating the situation. Is that correct? That trend line is still continuing to press on the smaller group?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, Senator Gerlach, that's correct. This issue has been ongoing for several years, and I think what you're seeing amongst that fully insured market is that as costs rise due to a variety of factors, including things like the MSHA assessment, you see costs become higher, and that forces small businesses to decide if they want to become self-insured, maybe if they're on the larger end of things, or if they need to opt out of coverage or seek alternative ways for their employees to obtain coverage. So this problem is getting worse, and it would be exacerbated as groups leave to join PEEP and thus avoid an MSHA assessment, putting a greater burden on small businesses.
All right. Mrs. Schmidt, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Catherine Commit, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. The previous two speakers and Senator Han have, I think, done a nice job of outlining the laying out the issues in this bill, and so I'm happy to answer any questions if people have questions.
Anybody have any questions for the health plans? Okay, then seeing none, Senator Han, did you want to wrap anything on the presentation? Then we've got some other witnesses that feel differently about your bill that we'll hear from.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to hear other views.
Okay. All right. Then I have on my list, I have, is it Ann Finn from the League of Cities? And then also then I on deck would be Nathan Morocco from MMB. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. And I just want to emphasize that PEEP is an important and viable option for public employee groups. It's something that the League does support as an option. We don't oppose the moratorium per se, but we do want to make sure that it's very limited in scope, that it in fact will expire as planned in the legislation. And also, we would like to make sure that we have some kind of accommodation in there for contracts or bids that are pending when the legislation goes into effect. So I think Mr. Morocco can explain a little bit more about how the bidding process works, but there may be some folks out there who already have bids that they're considering, and we would like to make sure that they're still able to consider PEEP when they're making their decision. I talked with Senator Han before the hearing, and he's agreed to continue working on that part of the bill as we move into the next part of the process.
Okay. If I could maybe just ask a quick question. Ms. Finn, the three items you mentioned, limited in scope, expiration date, and not affecting pending bids. Does the bill as drafted meet all of those or not all of them, or which there's an expiration date in it?
Mr. Chairman, the concern we have is about the pending bids.
So the pending
bill
is
accommodates everything else that would be a concern to us.
Okay, so the pending bid issue. Okay, Senator Han.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yes, we did have a conversation about this. I believe that this will be referred to the Health and Human Services Committee, and what our intention was to try to see if we could draft some language that would say that at the time of enactment, however we define a pending bid, would be permitted to continue to go forward in the process, and so that the moratorium would only affect prospective kinds of bids. The language hasn't been worked out, and rather than try to draft something on the fly, what we've agreed to is to see if we can put together some language and then amend it to the bill when it's in Health and Human Services.
Okay. Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Finn, do you know how many pending bids are out there, and if all of them were accepted, how that's going to affect any increase in rates for MCHA?
Mr. Chairman and members, Senator Brown, I don't know how many pending bids are out there, but I know that it's typically in the summer months when folks go out for their bids. And I would think that a number of folks wouldn't even be considering PEEP as an option, but there may be some who will. And I don't think it's going to be a huge number. It's my understanding from the advocates for the bill that it probably won't make a huge difference, but we just don't want to hinder those people that are, doing their due diligence out there and have PEEP as one of the competitors for their health plan.
Sure.
Okay. Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, I get my concern is, and I understand the fairness of that, but the point of the moratorium is to study this issue so those rates don't go up considerably. I do work with people as an insurance agent, specifically people ages 60 to 64 who are not yet Medicare eligible, and many of them struggle with even being able to afford MCHA where the rates are currently. So those are people who have retired, and they're on very limited incomes, and my concern is for them and just making sure that we do have this moratorium so we're able to study it without causing the rates to go up considerably between now and 2015. So,
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, we have that same interest.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. No further questions then. Mr. Morocco?
Thank you, Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nathan Morocco. I'm the director of the Employee Insurance Division, so I oversee both the State Employee Group Insurance Program, which is the program you all participate in, as well as the Public Employee Insurance Program that we're here to talk about today. Just as a point of background, I think the Senator Hand did a good job in briefly describing the program. Again, we're self-insured. We are completely comprised of the public sector, so typically that means school districts, cities, counties, those kinds of entities. Currently, we cover approximately 5,000 employees with about 4,300 dependents, so we're about 9,500 lives, somewhere in that range. And that's, frankly, that's double where we were even within a couple years ago, and again, largely because of the desire for some of the school districts to come into our program. But even with that concerted effort, there was, through Education Minnesota, there was an increase of about 3,000 to 4,000 lives that came into the program. And I think is largely sort of the catalyst for this discussion. It's important to understand the kinds of groups that come in. Not only do we have small to mid-sized markets, we also have individuals that come into the program. So we do have groups of one that come into the program. And I think certainly as you consider this from a policy perspective, you'll need to think about how you might address those folks who only have the individual market as a resource to go to. The median size of our groups is about 26. As I mentioned, we have actually 10 groups of one, and about 32 of our groups have 10 or fewer employees. So we certainly are part of the niche of the program is really to address very, very small groups. In terms of concerns that we would have for the bill, as one trying to manage an insurance pool, the idea of groups being able to leave the program, but no groups to sort of backfill for that does create some challenges for us from an underwriting perspective. During the normal course of business, and I think this would be true of any health plan or anyone running an insurance program, you would expect that some groups would leave. Perhaps they're healthier, perhaps they're better suited for the markets. Perhaps they want to go directly to the health plans. Perhaps they want to go into the service cooperatives who also offer these kinds of programs. And so we see a natural flow from year to year. Some groups are going to leave us. Some groups are going to come in. Essentially what we're doing is we're cutting off then that flow in, but we're allowing the flow out. So again, from a program management perspective, that creates some significant challenges for us. How do we underwrite that group that's still remaining? Presumably, groups that would leave because they can get better quotes from the service cooperatives or the health plans, meaning that they're likely to be more healthy. That will leave the pool that's remaining largely unhealthy, will increase the rates for the remaining group, and of course, then that impacts the local units of government that remain within the program. So we would certainly have some concerns from a program management perspective, and I think it's for your consideration the kind of impact that will have on the rates for the local units of government. Maybe one other point sort of clarification in terms of the kinds of activities that have been occurring over the last year or two. We did issue some significant bids in the last 12 to 18 months. In fact, we issued 250 bids. However, there were only 30 groups that came into the program. So while there is a lot of bidding activity within the program, there isn't really necessarily a lot of groups that are selecting our program. And that's okay. We're simply there as an option. It doesn't honestly matter to us whether these groups select PEEP, but for those that find it a viable option and would want to have that option, I think, maintaining that for some of the locals, albeit small, in this case 10% of the 250 bids decided to come into our program, but we do feel that it is a viable option for those folks. Further into those groups that come in, two-thirds of them are already coming in from some other self-insured arrangement. So they are already either prior to coming to PEEP, or perhaps the other are already self-insured, which means that they're not paying MSHA. They might be coming from a service cooperative, which doesn't pay MSHA. And so really, in terms of the numbers and its impact to the MSHA program, I'm not sure that it's as significant as perhaps one might think. However, I understand the intent of trying to do a study to assess what this issue would be. But certainly from the numbers that we're looking at, it's fairly small. So essentially 1,000 lives within the program that have come in over the last 18 months were paying MSHA, no longer paying MSHA. The other 4,000 or so, again, were already coming from some other self-insured environment. So these are just some of the concerns that we would have as a program, again, from a program management perspective, trying to underwrite. Obviously, we want to create as much stability as we can for these groups that come in. And oftentimes, these groups are coming in because they don't have a lot of other options, and that's really what we're there for. So to create more volatility within, within that pool is going to create some challenges for us, and that's where we would have some concerns. But at the end of the day, I really believe this is a policy decision for the committee. We're not talking about state dollars here that are at stake. We're really talking about local units of government dollars that are at stake, and that's, I believe, for you to decide whether or not, the concerns over their premium rates increases, and how that might balance against perhaps some of the issues facing a program like MSHA. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for coming late because I care quite a bit about this bill. I've taken the time to talk to Senator Hahn about it. I don't support the bill, and I have several reasons why not, but before I address it, I just wanted to ask Mr. Morocco, if the PEEP were to pay an MSHA assessment, what kind of effect would that have on the average person who has, the policy? What kind of an increase would that assessment equate to?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, that's a good question. I'm not sure that it would have like a dollar amount. I know when we've looked at this in the past, and as somebody had mentioned, MSHA is actually kind of a retroactive assessment on your group. We would assume that our rates would go up somewhere in the 2-3% range. That was based on some of the school pool discussions that have occurred over in past years.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, I think the issue with regard to MSHA is a serious concern, and I don't think that we have dealt with how we treat MSHA properly because self-insured, as we know, don't have to pay the MSHA assessment, and so there's a disproportionate pool out there that's shouldering our burden and our responsibility. And so, in fact, the very legislature, who created this solution for our high-risk patients or citizens, which is an outstanding program. I have a family member who's on that program and, couldn't be more grateful for that program. But we have put that burden exempted ourselves. We don't have to help pay for that, and I don't think that's appropriate. And so I would like to see a solution where we fix the MSHA problem. And so whether that be a bill that says the state pools have an MSHA assessment just like everybody else, I'd support that bill. I didn't support the bill last year that said only the new people coming in have to pay the assessment, but everybody else was grandfathered in, because, again, I don't think that was very respectful of the burden of care that we all ought to equally share. And so I think this bill is the wrong approach, and I think it's the wrong approach for a few reasons. I recall, Senator Hahn, when you and I, along with several other suburban members, were able to block the school districts wanting to have a mandatory health insurance pool. And we did that because our school districts were self-insured and they did not want to be forced to do something that was not in their best interest. And the school districts were very disappointed in our having blocked that. And they tried year after year. And I was very compassionate for their members who didn't have the kind of plans that the people in my district had. And so I felt as though we should have a better solution for them. And I remember suggesting that they go into a state pool. And I met with the state folks. I met with, I don't know if it was PEEP or the other plan, I don't recall. But I did think that was a potential solution. And I've been quite pleased to see that those districts that haven't been able to have competitive health insurance options have been able to join the PEEP plan. So I think for us to now arbitrarily, especially when we're getting so close to 2014, where there might be sweeping changes, I hope, with regard to health care in general, to this year, to put this arbitrary block and say teachers school district people, you cannot take advantage of this program that other public employees have been able to participate in because we're concerned, and the rationale is being said, we're concerned about the MSHA assessment. Why wouldn't we then instead take a step back and say, what's the problem? MSHA, tell us what's the shortfall, and then let us find the best solution to address that shortfall between now and 2014, when I think the landscape will look very different. In addition, I understand from the health care plans that one of their concerns is this notion of bidding, where school districts come and get a bid, just like you said, from PEEP, and then they end up using that bid to compare prices in the marketplace. And they, in fact, don't end up using your services, but they force these other plans to then lower their rates. And so there's been some concern about that practice. But isn't that what we want? Isn't that what Lucinda Jessen, the commissioner, started doing in conjunction with the legislature, saying we want to open up the marketplace. We want bidding. We want competitive bidding. You all should have to offer the very lowest price that the market will bear. And so, and Senator Hahn, I know you feel so strongly about that approach, as do I. I think that's the right approach. And so if, in fact, we're placing a burden on those public or the private insurance companies because there's this bidding is taking place, and I bet we're also forcing those co-ops to sharpen their pencil, well, so be it. That's the right thing. And so I don't understand the rationale for this bill. I think that we're solving a problem by having a solution which, in fact, is causing more problems than it's solving. And so I don't think a study should happen. I don't think we ought to put this barrier up. I think we should let the free marketplace work, and we ought to hear from MSHA what is their shortfall and then have a thoughtful plan to address that.
Senator Daines.
Mr. Morocco, just a couple of questions. It's my understanding when the public employees insurance program was started, it was started as the group side of insurance of last resort, similar to MCHA. The MCHA was for individuals. This is for groups. So when that started, we knew that we were going to bring in only unhealthy folks. So when you refer to the health aspect of it, under that basis, wouldn't you assume that you're going to have the most unhealthy people? Also, can you tell me the number of folks that have come into your group in the last year? How many of those folks were forced to come in there for health reasons, and how many folks choose to come in for other reasons? Do you have any idea on that?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Senator Doms, in terms of your first question related to unhealthy, you know, certainly it would all be relative to that group. I think if you were to look at our pool relative to, say, like a health plan, they probably have a much a broader spectrum of health. So they probably have very unhealthy like we do, and they probably have very, very healthy. I suspect that if we were to have a very, very healthy group like that, the competitive bids that the health plans could offer relative to us would probably draw them away. So to your point, that's sort of what removes the healthy people, but still, even within that unhealthy area, there's going to be some range, and we're also looking for for a broad enough group and a broad of health status that creates enough stability, at least, you know, within our world. But I wouldn't disagree with you. I don't know if it was created necessarily as the program of last resort, but it sort of by its formation and the way that it interacts with the marketplace, that sort of becomes the primary, you know, default. It also was created at the same time that a program like this for the private sector as well. MEEP was also on the books, similar to PEEP, and that was the it was intended for the private sector in the same way that PEEP runs for the public sector. So I think it was part of a much broader sort of healthcare attempt at to kind of manage the healthcare marketplace. MEEP didn't survive; it lasted for a few years. PEEP did survive, but obviously with the numbers, we've been operating at the 2,000 to 3,000 to 4,000 lives level for the last 10 years. So it is not it's not a major player in the marketplace, but it certainly does offer a niche. In terms of the health status of folks coming in, that we don't know. I could certainly see if I can create some perhaps aggregate information about some kind of risk profile of the groups coming in, but I wouldn't know that off the top of my head, and I'm not sure necessarily how to compare that you know, we could certainly work with the health plans and try to create some profile for you if that would be of assistance of perhaps like a typical PEAT program.
Senator
Mr.
Ames?
Chair, follow up, Mr. Morocco. I would just be interested to see if you had some way of projecting the number of folks that came just in the last year or the last 2 years that came because of health reasons. I would just like to know that number. I'm just curious if that, just how many folks are coming because of health reasons. And the other question I would have is how many folks came to you last year because it was the most competitive plan? And how many folks do you think made a comparison between what you offer in health coverage versus what other groups are offering? I understand what's happening from some of the reports I'm getting is that in some of these cases where the shift is made from the public sector to this program, and having been in the insurance business, I understand that you probably don't offer some of the things that some of the private programs offer. So in many cases, it may be a cheaper price or it may be an equal price, but they're giving up coverage. And that's a real concern, that when we're moving people into a program like this and we're giving up coverage, because typically when organizations agree to provide health coverage, they're doing it to try to keep their employees as healthy as possible. We've heard many a times when you increase deductibles or do this or do that or increase copays that folks will tend to use the hospitals or doctors less because they don't want to take the money out of their pocket. So if people are moving to your group with lesser coverage, I have a real concern about the folks, the employers. Their purpose of this is to keep people healthy. Are we kind of, in a sense, kind of going against the grain there by changing coverages or not offering the same coverages they have?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Senator Doms, I think you raised some excellent points. I would be somewhat limited in responding only because I don't know what these employers are offering. So if an employer comes to us and wants a bid, I'm not aware of the other kinds of bids that they're getting from the health plans or the service cooperative. So I wouldn't necessarily have a vehicle for comparison. We probably would have to go directly to the employers or perhaps even the health plans, because the health plans administer the PEAT program and they are also offering the bids for their own products. So they may be in a better position to help us with that. You know, to your point about health, certainly, you know, that's something that we strive for, both in the CGIT program and the PEAT. When we offer a PEAT program, we offer three levels of the program, one that's very similar to what you all experience in the CGIT program, and then we also have one that's more of a catastrophic program, and then one that sort of fits a mid-niche for those employers. It's really up to them to decide. We just simply make the plans available and bid based on whatever program they're interested. So, Senator Doms, I'd be happy to follow up with you, and if I can't, you know, provide the information, perhaps we can connect each other to some resources that can get us to your questions, if that's okay.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that.
Okay. I have two other senators, and then we also have two other testifiers as well, members. So, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to say that I appreciate and support Senator Bonoff's thorough assessment of the bill. And I have a question for Mr. Morocco. Is it your opinion that essentially, we are penalizing the rural areas of the state with smaller employees, roles with that rely heavily on this for affordable health care by this bill?
Mr. Chair and Senator Eaton, it certainly is an option for those folks, and whether they choose us or whether they choose a service cooperative, they're going to be essentially in a self-insured environment and wouldn't be paying the MSHA. I'm not sure that I can speak necessarily to rural Minnesota, but we would presume that the smaller employers in rural Minnesota, you know, are more likely to see the PEAP as a viable option than, say, in a metropolitan area where there's a lot more competition, both in terms of competition from the health plans as well as the providers that really provide services at a more cost-effective rate.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to touch a little bit on what Senator Bonoff had commented on, and I agree with some of what she said, but I do understand the reason for this bill, and that is we need to bring about some stability for MCHA. And again, my biggest concern is because I work with these folks, is people in that age group from 60 to 64 who they were let go from their job or they're no longer employed, and MCHA is their only option because of their health conditions. And for them to see a significant increase in their rates would mean they're going to go without, because many of the folks I meet with, they can barely afford MCHA as it is. And a 2 to 3% increase, as Mr. Morocco commented on, for the PEAK program, if this moratorium were going into effect, and I understand that was an estimate, that's not significant in terms of a monthly premium. But if we didn't have the moratorium, if we don't find some stability for MCHA, that age group of 60 to 65 who's on, many of them are on limited incomes, for them to experience a significant rate increase means they're not going to be able to afford it. And I would love to work with Senator Bonhoff and others on studying MCHA and trying to find some solutions to this. But, Senator Bonhoff, you talked about some groups being exempted, and I agree with that. I would love to see that change, but we're seeing the same thing with the Affordable Care Act, and there's numerous unions in Minnesota who have already received waivers and exemption from the ACA. So if it's true for MCHA making the mistake of exempting certain groups, we're already off on the wrong track with the Affordable Care Act and exempting certain groups again who are out there supporting that Affordable Care Act, but yet they want to be exempted from that. So we're off to the wrong start in that area. And we need to bring some stability to MCHA here in Minnesota, and we need this moratorium to do that. I'm not as concerned about our small employers as I am that group of people who are the most vulnerable, who are going to go without insurance if we don't bring about stability.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, what I'm suggesting is that, well, first of all, Senator Brown, I have studied it. I don't sit on Health and Human Services, but I've made a point of understanding MCHA and the relationship between MCHA and the provider tax and self-insured groups and not self-insured groups. And so the reason why we don't have to pay MCHA is because to comply with federal law, self-insured groups are governed under a different set of rules, so they don't have to, but we could decide to. And so that's the right thing to do. And it would mean that we would stabilize MCHA, and I don't even think it would have to happen for very long, because I think things will change in this arena, and they'll change quickly. But we could take a temporary measure and do something like that. And if we were to, and by the way, there are other things being done to stabilize MCHA. We're talking about stopping groups from having access to insurance. That does not stabilize MCHA. That will not stabilize MCHA. There is always a deficit with MCHA because of the way insurance plans are structured and the growth in the self-insured part of the business. So if we're really interested in stabilizing MCHA, then we ought to take steps. And so the fact that even those who manage PEEP are not comfortable with this bill lets you know that that isn't the best solution.
Senator Brown, to that point, we want to hear the other witnesses as well.
Mr. Sorry. Chair, we're not stopping people from having insurance. We're stopping from a temporary moratorium on their ability to expand their options for insurance.
Okay. All right. Then I also thank you, Mr. Morocco. I have Ms. Alswiger and then also then Mr. Thorson as well on deck. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alswiger, Education, Minnesota. Well, this health insurance for school employees has had a long road, and it's interesting that we're here today because this bill actually takes away competition for school districts to try to get good bids. Some of you were not around for the last few years, so I'm just going to give you a little bit of information. You know, Education Minnesota tried to get a statewide health insurance plan for school employees. Why? Because teachers, school employees in every one of your districts were seeing very high increases, double-digit increases, year after year. And so we had the statewide health insurance plan. And what did we say? Eventually, we said that self-insured wouldn't have to be in. We said that we would pay MCHA. We would make up MCHA. in the statewide health insurance pool, but you said, maybe not some of you, but the body, Governor Plenty vetoed the bill, said it should be voluntary and it should have competition. That is exactly what we are doing. Mr. Morocco talked about the history of PEEP, that, yes, indeed, in 2009, there were only 14 school districts, and I have to pat Governor Plenty on the back, because what he did is change the PEEP plan so that it was not an insurance of last resort, as our members see it. He changed it so that it was more like the Advantage plan, the very plan you have, except because our school employees have been having double-digit increases year after year, and even with double-digit increases, we're seeing a reduction in benefits. A reduction in benefits. So as a result, what they did in PEEP is put in three levels, because many of our school employees don't have coverage even close to what you have in the state employee pool. So only our numbers were 33 districts. Mr. Morocco's were 30, so I believe Mr. Morocco won his numbers more than me. But we believed there's about 30 districts that went in. This is only, as Mr. Morocco said, about 3,000 to 4,000 people, but some of them were already self-insured, meaning that you are fixing a problem for only 1,000 people in terms of the cost loss to MCHA. I have a handout if the page would pass it out.
I didn't want to hand it out while you were speaking.
That's okay. It's okay. I think the data will be so compelling that they'll want to hear my description of it and look at it at the same time. But I'll start in Senator Chamberlain's district. The White Bear Lake president came and testified in another body about what the PEEP offering did for his district. He said that over the last few years, we've seen health insurance premiums greatly increase, most years by double digits, and a couple years by 17%. In addition, over the years, we've been forced to accept, now this is the apples-to-apples argument that Senator Dames was talking about, over the years, we have been forced to accept lesser coverage and increased co-pays and increased premiums to attempt to control the costs. And the district didn't want to, they were reluctant to provide the data. When they went for a PEEP bid, get this, White Bear Lake alone saved $2 million in 1 year, only because they had the right to get a PEEP bid. White Bear Lake is not a huge school district. And I guess my information is very compelling. That's a good thing. But they decided they kept their coverage. They did not go to PEEP. That they kept their coverage the same as it had been, which was slightly better than PEEP. And the insurance company put favorable caps on future premium increases. And they included a new basic policy that would have no monthly out-of-pocket premium cost to their employees after their district contribution. Again, they saved $2 million. So I'm just going to highlight a few of these. This is a draft, and you might say, well, it's not complete. We gathered this information in 1 week. It is not sanitized. You'll even see some spelling errors in here. We put the good and the bad. For our position, almost every single one of these saw either a neutral or a savings to school districts. So when we talk about saving the MCHA, or the cost to the MCHA for 1,000 people, wow. We believe we, Education Minnesota, with our out-of-the-box thinking, trying to find a voluntary and competitive possibility, we saved a ton of money, millions and millions, and the teachers' union and the school employees' unions all did that. So here's a couple of things I would like to share with you, just quickly. I won't talk much about them. Centennial, again, Senator Chamberlain's district, saw a decrease in premiums of 5%. Senator Vanderveer's district, they had a reduction of 5.5%. Senator Reinert's district saved over $1 million the first year, and that number is far higher, but that's a conservative. Edina had a reduction of 10% because of competition. 10% reduction and an annual decrease of 23% in the consultant fees for insurance. Representative Gerlach, your biggest local, Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan, decided not to go out for a bid. Why? Because Health Partners said knew that they were thinking about it and said, well, we'll give you X rate, which I don't know the exact numbers, but they were under 10%. We'll give you X rate, but we're only going to give you a short amount of time, and if you don't take that rate, it might be gone. And so they countered with a lower rate, all because they were going out for a PEEP bid. Just about three more here. Senator Brown, Monticello saw a 4% decrease and a 5% cap of each of the next 2 years. Pine River, they say that if they did not have this PEEP process as a possibility, they would have no insurance. So when we talk about the people in EMCHA, we're very concerned about them, but they would not have insurance this year. And I would Tri-County up in northern Minnesota, they actually said they ended up with better benefits as a result. And I think the data is pretty clear that we have worked very hard to try to control school district premiums. We are saving school districts money. We are saving school employees money. I don't know how you can argue with the data. The local impact note that we had for the statewide health insurance plan, which was requested by Representative Laura Broad, showed over $10 million savings the first biennium and an $82.7 million the second biennium. That's with the statewide health insurance plan. This is even more, I believe. So when you're trying to talk about saving money for local units of government, you do not want to pass this bill. This bill is anti-competition, and it will be costly to school districts and school employees. I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Mr. Thorson.
excuse me, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Thorson with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Council 5. My work with AFSCME Council 5 is primarily with our local units of government and employees. I want to... correct a misperception folks may have that PEEP is something that's available just for school districts or just in greater Minnesota. This is an important tool for all local units of government, cities and counties, and not just smaller ones, large ones as well. I'd like to share an experience where my union, along with Minneapolis Police and Fire and our insurance coalition in 2010, were able to use access to having a bid from PEEP in our insurance negotiations. Now, in the city of Minneapolis, there's 24 bargaining units, and when we approach collective bargaining over insurance, we do it together in coalition because it's one plan that covers the 24 bargaining units, about 6,000 employees in the city of Minneapolis, the Park Board, the Municipal Building Commission, the Housing Board, and retirees. And that's about 12,500 covered lives. In addition to the folks AFSCME represents, it's various units of professional employees, again, Minneapolis Police and Fire, and numerous building trades bargaining units as well. 2010, Minneapolis is scheduled to go out for a bid for health insurance. And the current carrier offered an increase not to be larger than 13%, provided that another bid not be sought. The insurance coalition invited PEEP to come in and do a presentation to the bargaining units and our members of the team, just a presentation. That act alone, the threat of the insurance market in the Twin Cities for an entity as large as the city of Minneapolis ended up resulting in a carrier coming forward with a 1% decrease package, apples to apples, for health insurance. Now, in the difference in cost between a 13% increase and a 1% decrease for a year of this health insurance package in the city of Minneapolis is $8.4 million. And that's $8.4 million savings every year going forward. This win-win-win, both for the city, its employees, and the taxpayers of Minneapolis. If there was a moratorium in place, and that wouldn't be able to happen, these savings wouldn't be realized. This is an important tool for keeping down the cost of government, keeping down the cost of insurance for employees of government, and keeping down the cost for taxpayers. I would strongly urge a no vote of this bill.
Thank you. Any questions for either? Senator Dames.
Ms. Altschwager, could you tell me, you handed out, we received this sheet here. Can you tell me, did any of these school districts decrease their coverage?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, that is possible, but in the past, we were seeing significant losses in benefits. I would say that most of them were.
I'm talking about, Senator, I'm not talking about the past. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, can you answer last year? Let's focus on last year. Did any of the districts take less coverage? Do you know? Yes or no?
Mr. Chair, Senator, last year we did not have PEEP. So this year, if you want the answer for this year.
This year.
It is possible. I don't know. I'd have to go through the information.
Next question. Did any school districts pay more than what they were previously paying? Do you know?
I would be quite sure probably not.
But you don't know?
No, but okay, we could certainly talk to school districts, sure. But I would believe not.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair,
we had Senator Pappas.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess I want to say that I came into the hearing inclined to support this bill because I am concerned about the stabilization of MCHA, but I just think the testimony against it has been overwhelming. I mean, I just don't think, I think this is the wrong solution to a problem.
And Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, I just can't resist asking you this question. So, Senator Dames, are you for a mandatory coverage set for all people?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames. Senator Bonhoff, no. I'm not for a mandatory set. Mm-hmm. But I just am asking the questions because what I'm being told by school districts and by different groups as to what's going on in that playing field out there, being in the insurance industry, I have a pretty good idea how PEEP works, what PEEP was originally designed for, and we've strayed from that, and I just want to find out all the issues in order to make the correct decisions.
Thank you.
Any other members with questions? Then I should ask, is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak on the bill? Gentlemen, welcome to the committee, and please state your name and identify who you represent or yourself.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Matt Toburin, and I represent the Service Employees International Union. We're a union of school employees, school support staff throughout the state, and I also speak today on behalf of the Minnesota School Employees Association, which also represents school support staff throughout the state. We just want to add our voice to the groups who have concerns with this bill. One thing I want to be very clear on is sort of when we talk about what is the problem here that we're trying to solve. A year ago, I remember sitting in this very committee talking on other PEEP bills when the testimony was hundreds and hundreds of school districts are getting bids for PEEP, and there is going to be a mass exodus into PEEP, and there will be no school employees left in the private insurance market. And so hundreds of school districts did go out for PEEP bids, and now a year later, almost all of them didn't go. And they didn't go for a lot of reasons, and to many of the reasons that Senator Dames was mentioning is that the cost might be lower, but for many districts, when they do an apples-to-apples comparisons, and I know because I sat down with many districts as they did this, they weren't that excited about the coverage that PEEP offered. And so they decided to stay with the coverage that they have. But having the ability to go out for bids and to really take a close look at what their health insurance is and covers and what really they're paying for and what they're getting for that, for what they're paying, was a very important experience, and I think a very important experience for them to look at how they could continue going forward to look at reducing costs, not just for themselves, but for the district as a whole. And so That being said, this blocking any employee groups from going into PEEP in the future is not going to stop. Is not going to. There's not going to be the massive. I think it was $50-60 million that was mentioned. If every single public employee in the state of Minnesota went into PEEP, and that just is clearly not going to happen. And I just want to reiterate that the fiscal note mentions significant concerns about costs being raised for employees and employers if this is to go into effect. And so just on that basis alone, we're very concerned with what the effect of this would be. And so with that, I thank you for your time and urge you to vote no on the bill.
Thank you very much. Any questions then? Okay. Anybody else in the audience? Then Senator Hahn, do you have anything else to say?
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I indicated earlier, we would be willing to work with the League of Cities on an amendment to affect the any agreements that are pending. We'll try to work something out before we take up the bill in the HHS committee, but would respectfully seek a motion to pass the bill and refer to Health and Human Services.
Okay. Then, seeing no other discussion.
Roll call.
What's that? Roll call. Roll call being requested. The clerk will prepare for a roll call. Senator Thompson will has moved Senate File 1738 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Gerlach.
Yes.
Senator Bonhoff.
No.
Senator Brown.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Dames.
Yes.
Senator Eaton.
No.
Senator Gazelka.
Yes.
Senator Jungbauer.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Yes.
Senator Pappas.
No.
Senator Reinert.
No.
Senator Rest.
No.
Senator Sparks.
No.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Vandeveer.
Yes.
You. The vote being 9-6, the motion prevails, and Senate File 1738 is recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Brown. While we're waiting for Senator Brown and a few folks to leave, I think maybe our committee should recognize Senator Sparks for his new addition. So, congratulations. All right, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we've saved the most exciting bill for last. So, looking forward to talking about Senate File 2069. Members, this is a bill that's going to update language on travel insurance being able to be sold by travel agents. It really is a bill that has to do with registration. To compare to what other sectors are doing, this bill will do for travel agents what the legislature has done in the past for retailers like Best Buy. When you go in and buy a large screen TV and you go to pay for it and they offer to sell you a warranty, that's actually an insurance plan. They're allowed to do that because the legislature in the past updated language for that. It would be comparable to when you rent a car and you're at the rental counter and they offer to sell you insurance. Those people do not have, they are not licensed insurance agents, but the legislature in Minnesota allows car rental employees to offer that specific limited insurance plan. So this bill is going to do something similar for travel agents, and I have Mr. Fielding here to do a better job of explaining it than what I've done. So.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thanks very much for letting me talk with you today regarding Senate File 2069. My name is John Fielding. I'm with Steptoe & Johnson, and I represent the U.S. Travel Insurance Association. On behalf of USTAA and our members here in Minnesota, we urge you to support this legislation, which would modernize, essentially, the licensure process for limited lines travel insurance producers, those folks that offer travel insurance. It'll reduce regulatory burdens, current regulatory burdens, with a workable solution that'll make things easier and an easier burden across the state and the country, really. It's consistent with new national standards that were adopted by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners last year and a model act that's under consideration by NCOIL, the National Conference of Insurance Legislators, right now. We've also, this has been a process the last several years with the regulators and with other interested parties in the insurance sector, other industry trade groups, insurance producer trade groups, and so forth. And everyone is, we've worked through the whole process with them. The legislation would essentially do two things. One, it would update the definition of travel insurance to bring it in line with the changes made to the NASC uniform licensing standards and incorporate, essentially modernize the definition, incorporate changes that show what travel insurance offers today. Many of the states still have steamship coverage in their definition of travel insurance, and so we're just bringing it up to date to make sure that it covers exactly what the modern world does. Secondly, and most importantly, it would reform the licensure process for travel producers, again reducing regulatory burdens by establishing essentially a registration process for what we call them travel retailers. These are travel agents; they're not insurance agents. So these are people who sell trips to you. They don't do anything with respect to insurance except for offering and disseminating, as the other terms we use, these travel insurance products. And so it's pretty straightforward. We support the legislation. We think it's good for everyone. We think it's good for consumers. We think it's good for the travel retailers, as well as USTIA members, as well as legislators like yourself who work to protect consumers and foster a competitive marketplace. The legislation provides for a straightforward licensing process that will enable licensees to comply with applicable requirements in Minnesota as well as other states, which is really important, in a manner that fits the industry's business model and gives us clarity so that we know how to comply and we can comply. And that is sort of a brief summary. Please, if you have any questions, please let me know. I'd be happy to respond.
Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, I forgot to introduce this earlier, but I do have the A1 amendment.
Okay. A1 amendment's being passed out. Why don't you explain? It looks like it's only about one line.
Yes, the A1 amendment will just clarify the intent of this bill. The way it is, without this amendment, the way it's worded, it could be open to interpretation for including its employees, that those three words. This amendment will clarify, so it makes clear what the intent of this legislation is.
Okay. We just have the A1 amendment. It's the author's amendment. All those in favor of adopting the A1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. And the motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Brown, did you have anybody else to testify on the bill?
No, I do not, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Do we have any questions from committee members? Well, seeing no questions, is there anybody in the audience that wants to testify on the bill? And seeing none, then Senator Brown, since your bill moves that Senate File 2069 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to general orders. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. And the motion prevails, and Senate File 2069 as amended is recommended to pass and sent to general orders. Yes, if members, if you could hold on for just 1 second before we adjourn, Senator Brown, thank you very much. I just wanted to tell you we've got about a week and a half left, and we do have a few bills. Now, we're going to be losing tomorrow's committee hearing because of the trip to Granite Falls. And we there are a few other bills to do, but we have a long list of liquor bills that we have been accumulating, and they still are coming in. So we put them together, and we have probably about, 10, give or take, a couple different bills, and we want to hear them. And the only time we're going to be able to fit that in is going to be, I think, next Tuesday evening at 5:30. And you should have received notice on that, or if you haven't already. And we will make some food available for committee members and staff a little bit beforehand across the hall in the office for those of you, and we'll send you more details on that. But it will be an evening meeting from 5:30, and my estimate would be that it would last no more than 2 hours to get through those bills, Some are more controversial. Some of them will be very quick. It'll be a mixed bag. So we're gonna try to hold it to a two-hour committee hearing to hear them. We won't be voting on them. We'll be laying them over, and then for possible inclusion into an omnibus liquor bill. And we'll be discussing, getting some members' input on that, of course. And then the plan would be to add a committee hearing next Friday during what time?
8:30.
At 8:30. It's the only time slot we could get. It's committee deadline week. And then we want to be able to vote, roll out and vote on an omnibus bill, in which case we can either make motions to either add in or take out, but we want a bill then to move out of the committee next Friday. Am I missing anything on the announcements? Okay.
We'll meet next Wednesday.
And we will be meeting next Wednesday as well. So with that, yes, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, and I think my office told your office, but I do have pension commission that night. It's final action on the final pension bill. It may not take 2 hours to do that. It starts at 5.
Okay.
So it could be that I would just
a little
get
overlap
here late.
Then.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It's the time of year where we have to be in several places at one time. But we think this is not a lot of conflicts. There are a few. Okay. Then with that, members, thank you. The committee is adjourned.